Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Infrastructure, big fancy word. It means bridges, roads, and a vision of the future for prosperity in the United States. I follow the testimony to the Senate Transportation Committee by Michael Boskin, 15th chair of the Council of Economic Advisers for the President of the United States, now the T.M. Friedman Professor of Economics and a senior at Stanford University, and a senior fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, the Wolford Family Senior Fellow. I call upon Michael because the infrastructure bill, though delayed, is on its way. And what is good about the infrastructure bill and what should we watch for? Michael, a very good evening to you. Welcome. Your remarks before the Senate Transportation Committee applauded the infrastructure bill. So let's go with the positives. What can it do for the United States recovering from the pandemic? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening, John. Always good to be with you. Well, first of all, we do have substantial infrastructure issues. We have a backlog, some deferred maintenance and the like in our roads, bridges, ports, airports, et cetera. Some of that is a governmental responsibility, far from all. And some of that is a federal responsibility. Much of it is also state and local if it's purely within the confines of an area that doesn't extend across the jurisdictional lines. So we have to be careful about what we think the federal government should be paying for. But that being said, we have traditionally every 5 years had some sort of an infrastructure bill. The last one was called the FAST Act of 2015. It ran out. And some of the roughly half, to use simple fractions, roughly half is a reauthorization, and half of this is, quote, new money, additional funds that would be spent putatively over 10 years, some going to state and local governments, some more direct, but much of it through existing programs, some through new programs. A large part of it, but not all, far from all of it, is for what we most people think of when they think of infrastructure, but it's also broadband access, upgrading the electric grid. There's funds in here for electric charging stations for cars, although you wonder why Tesla can't do that or GM and the other companies rolling out electric cars. The federal government didn't fund gas stations when that was our predominant mode and will be for a while longer, but if we move much more in the electrification arena, if we're able to do that without totally unbalancing the grid, there should be private funds should be available for some of these things. But that's so part one is it's good that we're recognizing this issue, and it's good that some funding will be available. The big issue is how wisely and well it will be spent, whether it will be spent on things we really need, whether the incentives to be cost-conscious and effective and efficient and targeted will be there, or whether it will just be a large slush fund with lots of money going out. The states and cities have still not spent the overwhelming bulk of the money that they got in March of this year from the additional, quote, COVID relief, although much of it wasn't for COVID, $1.9 trillion bill that was passed, President Biden's bill. So how well they'll be able to spend the money, how carefully, how thoughtfully, we've had some historic blunders in the past. The train formerly known as high-speed rail in California is the biggest boondoggle in the history of the state. It's been downgraded to mixed speed now, blended speed, because it's going to use all of existing rail to keep the cost only outrageous, not ridiculous, and so on. So we've had many of these episodes. We do know from the academic research, from the history, that when you throw a lot of money at a problem, you wind up bidding up prices. We can't quickly expand the number of firms and workers that can operate giant excavators and tower cranes. You can't easily take an unemployed leisure and hospitality worker and quickly train them to do something that complex. So the notion that it's short-run stimulus is very, very poorly thought out. We could have a significant impact on our overall productivity, the way we get people to where they need to go, goods to market, our international connections. I know you're focused on a lot of international things. Well, our airports, our ports, et cetera, are big gateways for people and goods to come to the United States and to for our exports to leave. They're heavily congested, for example, in Los Angeles and Long Beach. We have large numbers of ships sitting offshore that can't unload, and we've got we have issues about having enough truck drivers to move the stuff once it is unloaded. So there's opportunity to do good. The big risk is that we'll spend a lot of money and get very little for it.
You mentioned in your testimony to the Senate the 2009 American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. That's the Obama administration recovering or seeking to recover from the Great Recession. There are lessons learned there, Michael, having to do with what actually is a shovel-ready project and what it means for the payrolls of the construction firms. Have those lessons been taken into account to your understanding of this new proposed legislation?
I think not sufficiently, John. I think it's unfortunately the case that we suffer from a hangover of the sepia photos from the Great Depression, workers, shoveling out ditches, et cetera. Modern infrastructure projects, public infrastructure projects are large, they're complex, they use heavy machinery, and very little shovel. President Obama even wound up admitting several years into his into the funding that you just mentioned, that something is almost a direct quote, there's no such thing as a shovel-ready project. So number one, they're not ready. Secondly, they tend not to be very labor-intensive, and they required very specialized skills primarily. If you think of maybe just repairing the street outside your house, that really isn't something that should be a federal responsibility, and there may be some guys there using some equipment, some shovels, et cetera. That may be a little more labor intensive. But the big public infrastructures we're talking about, major repairs or additions to or new projects in airports and dams, California, for example, certainly needs greater water storage, although Californians should be paying for that, not the rest of the country. So we have these issues, and decongesting the ports would be a good thing. The products and people come through, and they move out to the rest of the nation. So there's certainly a national responsibility. We all benefit from efficient movement of goods and services throughout the economy and our interaction with the rest of the world, whether that's north and south to Mexico or east to Europe and Africa or west to Asia and Australia. All that's important, and there's some funds in here that are likely to be used for that, and some of it will probably do it good. There's not enough emphasis on reforms that seem to be working. For example, congestion pricing has been a tremendous success in central London, if any of your listeners have been there. It used to be basically impossible to move. It would take you an immense amount of time. You could walk faster than you could ride in a taxi through central London. So congestion pricing has worked there. We're starting to see it. For example, dynamic congestion pricing based on how crowded the roads are, in some in Southern California, some in Washington and elsewhere. Those seem to be important successes that avoid the need for massive new spending to build additional highways and roads. Just use the existing ones more effectively and efficiently. Same with bridges and the like. But that's only part of the story. We do need some repairs, some makeup for a lot of deferred maintenance. Some of that is a state and local responsibility. Some of it's a private responsibility, but some of it is a federal responsibility as well.
You mentioned academic professors Durenton, Nagpal, and Turner have recommended in their paper 2020, better allocation is more important than big numbers. Does Congress accept that irony that articulation outweighs the number of words you're throwing at a subject?
I think probably not sufficiently. I think we still both, especially our political and elected leaders and the political discourse, tends to equate the amount you're spending on something with the actual outcomes. So, for example, we have a lot of evidence that a lot of spending in some school districts is still producing poor outcomes. So what we want to care about is the outcomes. How much better are the roads and bridges and ports? How much more freely are goods and services moving? How much less time are people wasting on congested roads commuting as we return to work, however much we'll be back to traditional work or continue some hybrid model? All of that's important, and that's what ought to be measured. And the Congressional Budget Office did a very substantial review of all the literature 3 or 4 years ago and concluded the typical return for public infrastructure investment is around 5%. That's not nothing, but it's not great, and it's lower than the typical return on private capital investments. So we need to use those funds wisely. You know, 5% is the average. There are some that do much better, and there are some, like California high-speed rail and some other notorious examples, that are negative return, that actually produce little and waste a lot of money.
Michael Boskin is the T.M. Friedman Professor of Economics at Stanford University, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, the Wolford Family Senior Fellow. He was the 15th chair of the Council of Economic Advisors. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at liveforpreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.